I almost don't want to start talking. It's so quiet in here. Thank you for the flowers. Someone shared some ideas for the title of last night's talk. I have a title for the talk tonight. Maybe you'll want to change it though. That's okay. I found a question too. I don't know whether it was for me. It was out on the table by the timesheet. I'll try to weave it into the talk. I like questions. So tonight's talk is entitled Openness is Empty Fullness. And the subtitle could be Open Awareness Doesn't Need a Chauffeur. Have you ever been chauffeured? Some people need it. They require it. They hire for it. They pay for it. And the idea, if you're being chauffeured, is that you get to just sit back and just watch the show. You don't have to work it, you know, keeping the car on the road. You don't have to worry about getting there on time. You know, you don't have to sort anything out. You just sit there. It's what some people, I think, are trying to accomplish in first class, or sometimes it's called business class nowadays on planes. And if you're like me, I always ride in the back section unless I get accidentally bumped up, which happened once. That was fun. But have you ever noticed walking by the folks in first or business class in the plane? They don't necessarily look that better off. You notice this? Okay, even though they can sometimes just go like this with the hand and they get served, you know, someone comes over and gives them a drink or is attending to them. And they paid 7 times more for their ticket than the folks in the back, or their business paid for that. The idea gets going that as one colleague of mine once said, it was slightly just disturbing, she said, I'm into the comfort model. And so I said, what's that? And she said, I don't want to do anything that I don't have to. And I contemplated that for a while. I wondered whether I wanted to keep her as a colleague. Openness is empty fullness. Open awareness doesn't even need a chauffeur. I hope you're seeing that this is not about creating a different or better experience, but rather about seeing the nature of what's always already, two key words, always already happening. And this always already happening is within every experience that's occurring. We're shifting, if possible, from focusing on the content of the experience, recognizing what is happening, to seeing the nature of that which is happening. In other words, I like to put it as, instead of just seeing what's happening, it's seeing what is happening to what is happening. If you have seen for yourself that chasing better or lasting experiences is an endless process, and that it's ultimately frustrating and unsatisfactory, then a natural turning occurs, a natural repentance, a natural curiosity wakes up. And I've been pointing at how that natural curiosity is part of our true nature, the human true nature, the Buddha nature, the original nature. The subtle or not so subtle turning that occurs, the curiosity that opens, is never a negation or a denial or a repression of the experiences or of the so-called world, but rather it's a resting amidst this world, resting amidst these experiences. The subtle or not so subtle pushing and pulling, manipulating and negotiating with life reveals that this very controlling, strategizing tendency veils the simple beauty of the tree. It veils the brilliant, soft bird's chirp. And it even veils the taste of a banana. Said another way, when this subtle or not so subtle pushing and pulling, manipulating, negotiating, and strategizing with life is occurring, it's as if you've never experienced life directly, openly and clearly. Because this pushing, pulling tendency veils that direct openness of life. Clinging at life or resisting life, the pushing and pulling. And this pushing and pulling, you might have noticed, can get extremely subtle. The true appreciation and gratitude for life comes through when something of the true nature, the true real nature of life shines through. Or as Steve pointed out, as delusion transforms into wisdom. By the way, everything that's happening is transforming into wisdom and compassion. Consider that. Everything that's happening, every feeling, every thought, every sensation, every perception, every memory, every sensory contact is transforming into wisdom and compassion. In fact, to be more clear about it, everything that's happening actually is wisdom and compassion. But because our minds think that life is about transformation, life is about something, whatever it is, or the things of life occurring in time or a path, then it makes sense for that mind to say, okay, everything's transforming into wisdom and compassion. But the real nugget, yeah, the real essence there, everything already is wisdom and compassion. This is wisdom and compassion. And the teachings point straight away, unfailingly, to that immediacy. And yet the transformation seems to be going on too. Okay, so wisdom and compassion aren't in any way static. They're constantly transforming also. The Dharma has no beginning and no end. No beginning and no end means deathless, birthless. It doesn't come and go. The true appreciation and gratitude for life comes through when something of the true nature shines through. The true nature of life can't be seen as long as the mind is busy trying to get something from life or get away from some part of life. These tendencies veil reality. Even as the body-mind relaxes, or as a human works through some issues or complications or stresses, a bit of the taste of things as they really are is coming through. The mind can confuse this sometimes and attribute the shift to the efforts that one thinks one is making. The idea that I'm becoming something better, acquiring something more lofty, arriving at a higher level, having joined a particular group that might say we're on a higher level. I think I was talking with one of you, I can't remember who, about the Dharma groups I experienced in Marin County, California, the so-called richest county in the States. I'm not sure whether it still is with the recession. But at any rate, the Dharma talk had a variety of characters participating, including the ones giving the talk. They're the most character of the characters by choice. And so the lounge chairs, I'm talking about some serious comfortable chairs, showed up with the armrests and the Coca-Cola, or maybe it was alcoholic, I don't know. And that's how folks showed up for the Dharma talk. And they came right in and put down their chairs, and never mind these cushions, I want to go first class. And look, if you can pull it off, if you want to do that, who's to say it isn't the way to go? It's just in this little mind over here that was taught never point your feet towards the teacher. So all these folks are there with their feet right up there, moving their toes. And the conditioned mind's going off, this can't be this way, this is not right, this is not the Dharma. It didn't get violent, it just got agitated. The Dharma's coming through everything. So sometimes the mind attributes what's happened in terms of a shift to the practice. Ah, meditation did it. If I didn't do it, the meditation did it. Somebody's been saying, you know, the meditation is meditating itself. Oh yeah, okay, the meditation did it. Guess what? It's the true nature of life revealing itself. Meditation, situation, circumstance, just assisted. True nature of the human is being uncovered there, here. In order to see this that I'm pointing at, actually any old experience will do, any place, any time, any circumstance, ultimately is no more or less advantageous for the opening. Beginning to see in this way allows life itself to become the temple, the shrine, the meditation center, the monastery. Home is everywhere, and meditation is always happening. Notice for yourself where the key line in this talk is. The shift that's being pointed at, particularly this weekend, is the shift from meditation as an activity that you do to how meditation is happening all the time as the very nature of awareness. Should I say that again? The shift is from meditation as an activity that you do. Because if meditation is an activity that you do, then you're doomed to fail at it. There will be times when your meditation is going better, and times when it's not going better, and there's times when it's not going at all. It's stalled, it's kaput, it's out of gas. However, when it's realized that meditation is happening all the time as the very nature of awareness, just see this, it's very simple. It's right here. And notice how the awareness is effortlessly here. I'm going to be pointing at this in different ways throughout the rest of the talk. This isn't about someone being present. Someone being present is an idea. And the idea, deeply at times invested in, even encouraged, you can become present, be here now, connect. This kind of myth of, you might say, realization, it's not truly realization, it's confused, you can become present, is just an idea laid over presence itself. Awareness is presence itself. It doesn't need anybody to do it. It doesn't need anybody to practice it. It doesn't need anybody to realize it. This is about how natural, simple, and spontaneous meditation truly is, and how meditation is one and the same as life living itself. Even through all the ideas and experiences of needing, doing, having, losing, remembering, forgetting, all the ideas of what or who you might think you are, even as any and all of this is occurring, none of it is happening. Couldn't be even pointed at with words without awareness. If meditation is limited to watching, allowing, accepting things or yourself, you will continue to go round and round on the wheel of samsara, even if your experience is one of a lot of pleasantness. Meditation is not what we think it is, but rather it's the observing power of awareness that sees through even the ideas of what meditation is thought to be. That's why the Tibetans sometimes call this awareness naked. Naked awareness. Meditation is not a certain posture or state or improved self-image, but rather it's the stream of being that is happening without any apparent beginning or end. Can anybody find the beginning of being? Where did being begin? And if you carry the idea that being dissolves with death of the body, the dropping of the body, you're pointing into the mystery. And isn't it fascinating that the design is that that cannot be known? Or you could say, cannot be known till you get there. Who gets there? Or another way to put it is, Stephen Levine, the poet, used to say, who dies? Because as it's clearer and clearer and clearer what's dying, that means passing away, it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer what doesn't die. And one of the interesting byproducts of that opening is that fear falls away. Not because anybody's working it out, but because it no longer needs to stay consolidated. Because its fuel source, its electricity, is unplugged. And just like with delusion, as Steve pointed out, fear is transforming into wisdom. For some folks, they feel more as the fear transforms, they feel it transform into love. Well, guess what? Love is wisdom, and wisdom is love. So meditation is not just mindfulness or concentration or tranquility, but it's the all-inclusive awareness or openness that sees all states and recognizes their inherent equality and ultimately without bias. And then the appreciation and gratitude comes. Because it's realized directly how generous life is to provide the full monte, the full spectrum. As the openness that everything is happening in is recognized more and more, it can be seen that this openness is empty. Empty in the sense of spacious and quiet. Empty in the sense that it is open. Open in the sense that it's full. And that's a lot of kind of words. Emptiness is confusing to the mind. It has concepts about what emptiness is as nothing, for example. So you could play with that and you could say, well, if the glass is empty of water, then it must be full of air. And you can play with this sense of what emptiness is in the head, or the thinking, or the image, or the analogy, or the metaphor. But as it's seen that the emptiness is openness, and the openness is emptiness, and that there's no self that's constellated in any kind of lasting or permanent or solid way at all, then this emptiness begins to be full. Most human beings in one way or another, want the experience of fullness. They want the experience of completeness. And as I've been pointing out, they go after that and they get what appear to them to be approximations of it, only to find those approximations dissolving. And that's the samsaric wheel. Now, if you don't want, as a human being, the, you might say, experience of fullness, then what do you want? That's one of the most profound questions you can ask a human being, is what do you want? Because what they want is what's organizing the very life they're living. Until it's realized that wanting is an endless process and it's unsatisfactory. And then the game, if you will, and that's what this is in a way, it's a game, becomes more subtle. And one might try to figure out how to want not to want, not to want, not to want. Try to break it down, break it down, break it down, break it down. See if I can figure out how not to want. Just as the teachings about no self are extremely difficult for the conceptual mind to get its head around, because the conceptual mind is part of the sense of self, so too emptiness is in a way difficult to see through thinking about it. So what do we do then? We sit on our butts intentionally and let what comes up come up and begin to get a glimpse of the openness that everything's happening in. And as that isn't shied away from, resisted, avoided, and one doesn't too quickly just go back to the familiar habits of living in phenomena and the stream of sensations and thoughts and memories and the idea of being mindful and the idea of meditation and the ideas about why I'm alive and what I'm living for and what I want. But there's this ever-present availability to simply rest into that which everything is abiding in, and then watch what happens to the abidance. Watch what happens in the world, so to speak, of phenomena, experience. Rumi, I think, can put it way better than myself with regards to emptiness in few words, because talk upon talk upon talk could be given about emptiness. And it's so important and yet difficult. So let's cut to the chase. This is called Praise to the Emptiness That Blanks Out Existence. Praise to the emptiness that blanks out existence. Existence, this place made from our love for that emptiness. Yet somehow comes emptiness, this existence goes. Praise to that happening over and over. For years, I pulled my own existence out of emptiness. Then, one swoop, one swing of the arm, that work is over. Free of who I was, free of presence, free of dangerous fear, hope, free of mountainous wanting. The here and now mountain is a tiny piece of straw blown off into emptiness. These words I'm saying so much begin to lose meaning. Existence, emptiness, mountain, straw, words and what they try to say swept out the window, down the slant of the roof. If you find yourself drowsy ever again, if you find yourself sliding towards sleep suddenly, you are entering emptiness. Funny thing is, you think you're going from existence to emptiness. Rumi says it so well. This place made from our love for that emptiness. This existence made from our love for that emptiness. Praise to that. This existence is empty, open, full of what? This. This empty, open awareness is uncomplicated and simple. Watch this. It can't be objectified. It's not an object. And yet, it mysteriously can recognize itself. Notice awareness recognizing itself right now. Notice that it's impossible to figure out how that's happening. And yet it's happening. Awareness is not a thing, like a thought, a feeling, or sensation is a thing. When I use the word thing, I mean an object of knowledge, something that can be objectified. But rather, awareness is that which allows and sees all things. Therefore, key piece right here. Therefore, it is in and with everything. Awareness is in and with everything. And that's what oneness means. Oneness isn't some kind of expanded big idea of everything's together. Oh, that's a shot at it. Some people go, oh, oneness. Oneness is everything's together. Oneness is that everything, anything, is by nature endowed with awareness if it is appearing. And this is unstoppable. Now let's look at this. You can try to be unaware, and you might be able to block out certain experiences or feelings, sensations, but awareness itself cannot be stopped. And therefore, it can't actually be altered. In deep sleep, it appears to go away, but instead, it is quietly effulgent, which means radiant, as peace and harmony that is remembered in the first waking moments when the thought comes, boy or girl, did I sleep deeply? I'm thinking, I slept deeply. What happened was the I that gets tired being awake dissolves in deep sleep. if you try to be unaware, what you end up with is the awareness of trying to be unaware. There's a myth called becoming more aware. And there's teachings that suggest you can become more aware. Awareness doesn't change. Experience keeps changing. And as experiences change, like you amplify an emotional experience, and some people say, I'm becoming more aware of my emotions. You're not becoming more aware of your emotions. Your emotion is changing. There's no levels of awareness, yet different people experience awareness in different ways at different times. Okay? So I pointed last night at the very simple awareness of just noticing that a sound is happening, or that a thought about, you know, my car, or you know, can't wait to go to bed, or can't wait to get out of here, or boy, I wish I could stay longer, or boy, I love Steve's yoga, or can I do more I'm going to try it at home. In fact, I'm going to encourage them, my family members, to join me. We'll hold hands before dinner and go or change it into om. I'm thinking these things, right? And I'm thinking I'm becoming more aware of my future. I'm more sensitive and aware of my future. I'm able to see my future possible activities and thoughts more clearly. I'm seeing this. Awareness doesn't change. It's experiences that are changing. Awareness is that which is presencing itself. Here's the ing, very useful. Make it a verb. Presencing itself. Awareness is presencing itself in and through everything that's happening. Now there's really two ways to listen to this. One is to listen to this and try to understand this. That's up here. The other is to just let these words, as Steve pointed out, very nice word today for me, porously enter. And then there's nothing to understand, there's nothing to figure out, and you don't even have to try to listen. Because there's nothing to understand. Some call this presence or being. But again, as I pointed out last night, it doesn't matter what you call it. What matters is that it's realized or awakened to. And as it's awakened to, the insight comes that awareness is already awakened. See this? Awareness is already awakened. It doesn't become awakened because it's awake. And at the same time, it's awakening. It's awake and awakening all at the same time. It's spacious and non-locatable. Notice this, awareness is completely non-locatable, which means it has no center and it has no circumference. That means it's centerless. Can't be defined, but it can't be confined either. It's too profound to be intellectualized, meaning none of these concepts can actually get hold of it or reach it, and yet it's right here, invisible and yet so tangible. It's that which is recognizing everything that's happening. When I use the word recognition, I don't mean to recognize. I mean to see clearly. It's awareness itself that's seeing what's happening here. It doesn't do anything. But no so-called doing or actions occur without it. Watch this. Even as you may recall being spaced out, awareness is there in remembering being spaced out, or in the sense of coming back from having been spaced out. It's nowhere specific, and therefore it's everywhere at the same time, which means it's global. However, when there is an I thought or construct that attaches itself to awareness, then it often seems to be located in the head or perhaps the whole body. Notice that. When the I, idea, links on to awareness, then that suggests that awareness is located up here, because a lot of folks sense that watching, yeah, is happening up here, right? Things are being watched from up here. Or maybe you're different. Is watching happening from the center of your palm? Is watching happening from the shoulder or your big toe? Well, how about your backside? Is watching happening from your backside? Yeah? Now, you might sense you're watching your backside, but where are you watching your backside from? If you think this is a waste of time, just possibly, Lao Tzu helps us out. If I can find him. Forget him, I don't want to find him. There is no I that is aware. Awareness just is. And sometimes the mind places the thought, I am aware, on awareness. If experiences like thoughts and feelings and sounds and sensations and emotions are objects, then the conditioned mind suggests that awareness is the subject. Awareness is the watcher. Or if that loosens up, then awareness is watching. Awareness is the subject, and the objects are the things that are occurring. This can only happen if there's an I thought that's attached itself to awareness and thus identified with awareness as what I am. I am the subject. So if I am awareness, if I am the subject, looking at, watching the objects, well, that's probably, in many cases, going to be better off, I think, if there's a spaciousness and an openness and a quietness and a peacefulness that's there, rather than being caught up in those objects, those emotions, those sensations, those feelings. And so it's very attractive and seductive to kind of fall back, or some people say fall up or lift up into being the subject. However, notice the openness that rests beyond needing to be identified as anything, even the thingless thing of awareness. Notice the openness that rests beyond need to be identified as anything, even awareness. This is seen through the subject-object identification or conceptualization. why bother with the idea or feeling of being awareness when it's possible to rest into complete openness that needs no identification whatsoever? In the Buddhist teachings, the culmination of the Eightfold Path, the Fourth Noble Truth, is right view. Right view starts out as thoughts, ideas, and the slow but sure, you might say, penetrating through the different views that the mind has. Eventually, right view ends up in no view. The end of view, which is another way to say the end of someone or an I that needs to have views in order to exist. The Dharma, the truth of the way things are, is replacing the sense of you as a thing, an object, a body, mind, and even as awareness. The Dharma, this truth, fully liberates this body, mind to be as it is, fully including it, but not being limited by it at all. What we are is the Dharma. We're not going to become the Dharma, realize the Dharma, figure out the Dharma, live according to the Dharma. We are the Dharma. This is the Dharma. The body-mind, the process of this unfolding, is already free as itself. It's not going to become free. It's already free in any way that it's manifesting, however it's manifesting. Awareness is openness. Emptiness is openness, and therefore awareness is emptiness. Again, the Buddha, pith instruction, watch. The true nature of mind is the inseparability of awareness and emptiness. This simple sentence is the liberation of vipassana, the liberation of seeing through. Poetically articulated this way: to abide as the natural presence of emptiness is the calm abiding of awareness. And to perceive it vividly clear is the clear seeing of vipassana. To abide as the natural presence of emptiness, which is fullness, is the calm abiding of awareness. And to perceive it vividly clear is the clear seeing of vipassana. All phenomena, all things, are actually moving or still. But whether they're moving or still, they are by nature unobstructed. This truth of the way things really are is in the background until it comes to the foreground. We're here together to allow it to come to the foreground. You could say to get out of the way so that it can reveal itself. Pointing at it and sitting together as we're doing is this allowance. Identifying yourself as this or that is really about not seeing things the way they really are. Everything being itself, being is doing the very thing that the mind is trying to figure out how to do. Being is doing the very thing that the mind is trying to figure out how to do, which is simply be itself. So let's take delusion or confusion. The deluded or confused mind is simply and utterly attempting to be itself. That's all it's asking for. And in being itself, it spontaneously, without obstruction, transforms itself. That is wisdom. Everything is already being itself. Mind, when trying to figure out how to be itself, is already being itself, even as it tries to figure out how to be itself. Seeing that the I, or self, construct is empty of what it has taken itself to be, which is often who you are, or what you think you are, then everything else empties itself of what it had been assumed to contain. What we really are is too profound to see. Can't be grasped conceptually or intellectually. Insight reveals you are profoundly more than any single thing or form, and yet the illuminating power of awareness includes all forms and is not limited to any. The real doer is the Dharma itself, and it's unimaginably mysterious and vast. What we call relationship is everything relating to itself. When the eyes look and see whatever they see, they are looking at you. As much as they are looking from you, they are looking at you. This isn't woo-woo. This is the way it is. When constructs are seen for what they are, they spontaneously empty themselves. They're no longer a compelling screen on the light of presence or awareness. The constructed conceptualizing mind can't grasp the mystery, and in this sense, there's nothing for it to do. And when the conceptual mind realizes, or it's realized, that the conceptual mind has nothing to do, it does one of two things. It just releases, or it starts getting concerned, agitated, and starts to scramble. So the mind is not the doer, because there is no doer in a localized or personal sense. There's no fixed or defined position of what you are. Everything is relating to itself as everything.
The practice colludes or collides itself with the same construct that perceives itself as the doer. If you want to point at, if we want to point at what generates the friction in the practice, the friction is generated by a collision of the dynamics of the practice with the construct that perceives itself as the doer. And when that friction dissipates, when that so-called, and for many folks, it's the suffering, they perceive the friction as the suffering. When that friction dissipates, what's happening is the practice or the awareness, like light, is shining through the sense of doership and revealing its insubstantial, empty nature. Which basically means it doesn't exist as you think it does. The concept of practice, the concept or sense of doer, collide and cancel out each other. When the lava flows from Kilauea on the big island of Hawaii, and when the timing's right and it goes into the water and is filmed underwater up close, as the lava interfaces with the water, there is a display of light and dark that's more magnificent or equally magnificent to a completely clear, star-filled night. The only difference is the particles of light are appearing and disappearing so rapidly as the lava and the water interact that the eye, mind, brain cannot keep up with it. Believe it or not, that's what's actually happening here. This is changing so fast, so radically, so powerfully, appearing and disappearing so quickly. We think there's continuity here. It wouldn't even be a very good image to suggest this is more like a movie made up of individual frames moving through the projector. If the image of the lava and the water stimulated something, the mind can go find that and see it. The concept of practice, the concept of doer, collide into one another and cancel one another out. And then there is no practice and there is no doer. And yet life is being done. That's the Dharma. That's the opening into empty fullness as the Dharma takes over or reveals itself right through whatever else you think this is about. So, in conclusion, awareness is simply being, presence, things are simply being done. Can we sit for a minute?